Okay, we're beginning here, 15 lines down on the top of Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. We left off with the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Marav that said that the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Meir with an Asham Talui, whereby Edim came and testified that this individual was Chayav and Asham Talui, and then Edim Acherim came along and said that the first Edim were not possibly Edim because Imanoaitim, you were with us. And ever since they were Mezim, the first Edim, and they invalidated their testimony, that there, even the Chachamim will agree, v'yitzevi rebe eder, that he goes out and grazes the eder, it's totally chulim. And the reason being is that the Rabbanan argue in a normal case of Asham Talui, because when he is separating it out, when he thinks he might have done an Aveira, over there he's libo nokfo, he has those pangs of guilt, and therefore he's gamar b'dato to the hakdish et Asham Talui fully. But that's only true when it's something that is driven by his own volition, something driven by his own pangs of guilt. But here, where it came from an outside stimulus, like the Edim, over there he doesn't necessarily rely on the Edim. Now Rashi and the Balei HaTosfot over here say that this is uniquely associated with Hazama. It only has to do with Edim Zomimim, which is that only when the first Edim came and the individual knows that they are lying, because he knows that they weren't there or that he wasn't there on that day. If that's the case, then the individual relies on the fact that other Edim will come, or he'll bring Edim to substantiate his position. On the other hand, if it's Stam Edim that come along and say something, and then afterwards other Edim come and testify to the contrary, over there we would not say such a thing, and the Chachamim would still hold to their position that Libo Nokfo, and he would have brought the Korban full-heartedly, and therefore when the second set of Edim come and Machish the first set of Edim, it does not release the animal. And so they say that this is a unique statement by the case of Edim Zomamim, although there are those that disagree with this view of Rashi and the Balei Tosafot and say that it has broader application to any time the Korban is being forced upon the individual by outside stimuli. Then, in that instance, he always relies on the fact that maybe someone will come and undo his necessity to bring the Korban, and he's not makdish it. When it comes from his own volition, when it comes from his own guilt, there he's makdishit legamrei. So that is the statement that we saw at the end of yesterday's daf with regards to Rav Yehuda Marav saying the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Meir in that instance. And now we have a question on that meitiv rava. So over here in our Gemara it's rava, the Shita Mekubetz says it should be rabba. Shor niskal eino chein. When it comes to shor niskal, it's not similar to the case of Nasham Toloi. Imach lo niskal yitzei b'yireh b'eder. Before it is stoned to death and it's found out that it shouldn't have been killed, then it goes out to graze, meaning that it turns into something that's totally free of any problems. So, hey, chidami, what is the scenario here? If it's the case, or the scenario is that two individuals came and say that the animal should be killed because either it killed or it was involved in bestiality, and then another set of Edim come and say that it didn't kill, or it didn't perform bestiality, and therefore it's not subject to be stoned. My chazit, the tzait, the bratrai, tzait, lehuda kamai. Why do you listen to the second of Edim? Why don't you listen to the first set of Edim? Meaning that you have here what's called an edut mucheshet. In that case, why do you rely on one over the other set, and why would you then release the animal? Now, the Balei Tosafot would say it's obvious you release the animal in this case, because kemitat balim kach mitat ashur. We have a hekesh between the determination of what would happen to the owners, and that similarly will happen to the behemah. And in a case where you have edut mucheshet, the balim would not be put to death based on conflicting edut from two sets of edim. And similarly over here, this shor will not be put to death in a situation where you have conflicting edut as to whether it did or did not kill, whether it is deserving or not deserving of the death penalty. And therefore, you can't make it asur b'hana'ah. So Tosafot says that the question does not derive from the fact that the animal is now chulin, but rather from the latter part of the Mishnah where it says that after it's already stoned, then it is mutar b'hana'ah. And Tosafot says, wait a minute, when you're talking about before the fact, and then you have a safek in putting it to death or not, then we say that you do not put it to death. On the other hand, once it's already killed and it's already asur b'hana'ah, and now you have conflicting edut, over there you have a safek doraita where the isur hana'ah is already devolved upon the animal, there you can't remove it with Edut Mucheshet. And that's the question over there. If we're dealing with Edut Mucheshet, why should the Iser Hana'ah dissipate? On the other hand, there are those that, like the Aruch Nener, say that even though, yes, by Edut Mucheshet we wouldn't put the animal to death, but still it's a Safek Doraita. And a Safek Doraita, we'd go to Chumrah and assume that it's still Iser Hana'ah, and therefore why should it go to Chulin? So the nature of the question is, our Mishnah seems to indicate that when you have a situation in which you have a shor and iskal that is different or differentiated from an asham taloi, and we're trying to discover what the case is. Is the case of edut mukheshet, and the Gemara rejects that possibility of being edut mukheshet because over there, there's no reason to believe that it should be, that either if it's discovered the information before it was stoned, it's released to chulin, or after it was already killed, it's mutar ba'ana'a. And therefore, according to the Baal Tosfot, the questions from that second statement, which is, if it's mutar bana, why does edut mukheshet end up like that? Whereas, according to the Aruch Haner, why is it that you release it to chulin if it's edut mukheshet? So that can't be that explanation of that part of the Mishnah. Rather, I have to come up with a different explanation. This is the basis by which Tosafot says that edut mukheshet is very different than edei hazama. As the Baal Tosfot will point out, why is the Gemara going through the trouble of trying to say that it's not edut mukheshet, rather it's edei hazama? It could have just said it's edut mukheshet, and whatever the din is by shor niskal, it's different by asham taloi. To that, Rabbi Yehuda can answer and say edut mukheshet is different. By edut mukheshet and ochanami, the Rabbanan would agree that the asham taloi remains a sur because of the fact that he was makdishit because libo nokfo. But by edei hazama, he always holds out hope that he's going to be able to overturn it. And that's where the Baal Tosfot would say, you see that the Gemara is not willing to accept this as being the question on Rabbi Yehuda Merav, because if it was just about Eidut, even Rabbi Yehuda Merav would agree in that case, or they can answer the Mishnah as being Eidut Mukheshet is different than Eidut Hazama. For that reason, the Gemara here goes through the trouble of showing that the case of Shor Niskal is not a case of Eidut Mukheshet, because then that part of the Mishnah doesn't make so much sense. Either because according to Tosfot, why should it be Mutar Bahana after it was already stoned, or according to Aruch Haner, why should it be released to the Eder before it was stone? And therefore, Rova or Rabba over here, when asking this question, forces the explanation of the Mishnah towards a case of Eder Hazama. And then he says, so must be El Alav Vedei Hazama. Must be the case of Dedei Hazama. So that's why the case of Shor Niskal, when Eder Hazama come along, that's why the Shor is released. According to the Aruch Haner, that's why it goes to the Chulin before it's stone. And according to the Baal Tosfot, that's why it's Mutar Bana afterwards, because we eliminated the Edut that said it was Chayav Hariga. We eliminated it completely at Yedei HaDei HaZama. Now I understand why in that case the din is such for the Shor Niskal. But if that's true, the Kabatei Gabay Hashem Talui, Be'edei HaZama, Uplige. It's saying in our Mishnah that Shor Niskal is differentiated from Hashem Talui. And Shor Niskal is released when you have Edei HaZama. The implications are that the Hashem Talui, which in our Mishnah says there's a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, what happens to it? That machloket exists even in the face of Eidei Hazama. Because if we explain Shor Niskal by Eidei Hazama, then you're saying contrast Shor Niskal to the case of Hashem Taloi. Shor Niskal, everybody agrees it's released. By Hashem Taloi, there's a machloket. If we just establish that the case of Shor Niskal is the case of Eidei Hazama, then now we've also established the fact that Hashem Taloi is even in the face of Eidei Hazama. In that scenario, there's still a machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. If that's the case, then Rabbi Yehuda Merav's statement that the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Meir in this case is not true. So Amalei Abaye says back to Rava, his peer, or Rabba, his Rebbe, Vilma Shor Niskal, Hechidami. Maybe the case of Shor Niskal is this way. Who says you have to say that it is a case of Hazama? Kagon Shebaharug Beraglav. Two Edim come and testify to the fact that it killed so-and-so, and therefore it's subject to a death penalty. And sure enough, the victim that they said was killed by the shor walks into the Beit Din. And that's why their testimony is undermined over here. Ukavatei gabei Hashem Taloi. And what would be a similar scenario by Hashem Taloi? Gon shehukra chaticha. That they found the piece that he supposedly ate that was chalev, and they found it now, and they see that the piece that was left over was chalev. That means the piece that he ate was not chalev. So they have the actual evidence in front of them, and the evidence undermines the testimony in the Edim in each of these cases. So in that scenario, when it comes to the Shor Niskal, over there is an upending of the entire indictment of this Shor, and therefore, it's not going to go be the Niskal, it's released to Chulin, or even after it was killed, it'll be Mutar Bahana. On the other hand, when it comes to Hashem Taloi, if you say that the item is found, and now we've released the Safek, that means prior to that point in time, it was a regular Safek, where Libo Nokfo, that he was bothered by it, even through the testimony of Edim. And the Mishnah says there's a machloket, and that's fine, because that's not the case that Rabbi Yehuda Merav was addressing. But in a case where he separated out the Hashem Taloi Apiedim, and then Edei Hazama came and undermined them, that would not be the case, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda Merav's statement would remain the same. They're addressing a case of Edei Hazama. The Mishnah is not speaking about that. The Mishnah is speaking about a case where the information became so obvious that the Edim were wrong, that's how we disproved them. In that case, Shrani Skal will be released completely. Asham Talui will be subject to the regular machloket of Rav Meir and the Chachamim as to whether a person, when they're in the state of safek, is makdish the gamre, the animal could leave bonofo, or whether he holds out hope. And that will be true there because he has no idea that these other edim or this other evidence is going to come along. And so therefore it's like a regular safek. If that's the case, then this is not a disproof to that statement of Rav Yehuda Amarav. The Gemara answer is, Beplukta. This machloket that you're seeing here between Abai and Rava in their explanation of the Mishnah, which then leads to a question on Rav Yehuda Amarav, or according to Abai, no question on them, that's also a similar machloket between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan in another context, which is Asham Talui Shuz Mu'edav. That's the case we're speaking about here. Asham Talui that was caused to be brought by Edim, and then those Edim were found to be Edim Zomimim. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Arihi Kiminchat Kinaot. It's no different than the mincha that a sota brings when she is accused of being a sota or unfaithful to her husband, Titania. Nimsu eidah zomamim. If the edim that testified to the fact that she secluded with this individual and that precipitates the necessity to bring this korban mincha as part of the process of the sota, we find that those edim are zomamim, minchata teitzei l'chulin. Her mincha is released to chulin, and similarly, an asham talui is released to the chulin. That'd be similar to Amar Yehuda Marab's position and Abai's defense of that position, that in this case, we would also release it to Chulin, and the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Meir in that situation. Yochanan says that the Asham Talui in that situation will be put out to graze, sold, and then monetized, and the money is put towards Ketz Mizbeach, put into the coffers for Olot when the Mizbeach is Batel. So now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Chachamim's position stands, even in the face of Edim Zomamim. That would be similar to Rova's question on Amar Yehuda Marav, where he says that it sounds like Edim Zomamim do not release the animal to Chulin. And that's the way that Rabbi Yochanan is similarly suggesting over here, that it's not released to Chulin. But Rabbi Yochanan Maya the Minchat Kinaot, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan subscribe to that which his Talmid and Chaver, Rabbi Elazar, says, that it's like a minchat kenaot? He says, lo domi, minchat kenaot lo lechapara ka'atyo. They're not similar. A minchat kenaot is not coming to provide kapara, elevare ravon. It's coming to be a decisive factor as to whether the woman did or did not seclude and then have a extramarital affair with the person that she secluded with. It is a korban that is brought to determine the reliability of this woman in speaking the truth as to whether she was or was not faithful to her husband in this situation. Once we know that the edim that indicted her were now taken out, she doesn't have to defend herself anymore because there's no evidence that she did something wrong, that she now has to have a korban mincha and the whole process of sota to determine whether she's telling the truth or not. But for the asham talui, where it's coming to provide kapara, by the asham talui, like we've seen all along, the chachamim maintain that position that if it is something where the person feels guilty, then they are makdisha the gamre, because they want the protection to be afforded to them in the interim, and therefore they're makdisha full-heartedly, and the animal will not be released to chulin. So this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, that by Edim Zomim, the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Meir, is really a machloket Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rabbi Elazar, he says, like Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, that the animal is released to chulin, even according to the Rabbanan. And Rabbi Yochanan says, the machloket still exists with regards to Edim Zomim by Asham Talui. Even though the impetus from bringing it are the Edim that were found afterwards to be disqualified, but at the time that the Edim came, he didn't know that, or he wasn't certain of that, and therefore he was makdish the animal full-heartedly, and it will not be released to Chulin when we find out that those Edim were really Edim Zomamim, and then that would accord with Robo's explanation of the Mishnah that was a question on Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. Amar Rabbi Kruspudai, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have a different statement, Shor Niskal, Shehuz Mu'edav. So a shor niskal, where edim are found to be edim zomamim, kolamaksik bo zachat bo. Whoever takes possession of it then, whoever is in possession of them, it becomes their property. In essence, what we're saying is that once the shor niskal was determined to be a shor niskal, the balim's ownership was removed from the shor niskal. Now the question is, why is it that his ownership is removed from the animal? Is that something that happens actively, or is that something that happens passively? Do we say that since he knows that the shiny skull is going to be killed now and it's going to be worthless to him, he basically is mafkir it because he has no use for it anymore. He has no value in it. And therefore, once the animal was found to be guilty and its verdict was rendered already, and he's just waiting for sentencing, He just is mafkirit because he has no value or usage with it anymore. That sounds like what is happening here. That's what Rashi seems to explain over here, that it all has to do with the individual themselves. And the Gemara, which comes up right after this, makes it sound like it has to do with what the Balim are thinking, and therefore it's determined by them. So that's one way to explain why it leaves his possession, but that sounds like it has to be something more active, where he actively is mafkirit. The Beit HaLevi brings, based on a diuk from the Yerushalmi, that he thinks that the Hefker over here is not real Hefker in the sense of he's mafkirit, rather it's because of Yeush, where he basically gives up hope, or he has despair of ever recovering this animal because now it's going to be put to death. And through that Yeush, that is what creates the release of his ownership over here, is the despair. So it's not an active form of Hefker, but rather a release of ownership because of the despair or lack of hope that the person has in ever seeing or recovering this animal. Although others want to suggest that the driving force here is the Isur Hana'a. The fact that now this animal is going to be Asur B'Hana'a means that there is no ownership left in the animal. Because when there's an Isur Hana'a, there's no value left in the animal. If there's no value, there's nothing to own if the item is valueless. And therefore, without the owner actively mafkir, or even the owner feeling those feelings of Yeush, it would happen by itself because it is Mufka. It's taken out of his possession by the fact that it is an Isur Hana'a. And that Isur Hana'a means that there's no longer any balut over here. And so what we're seeing over here is that the animals being found guilty of killing based on the testimony of the Zedim, that triggers or generates this Hefker, whether it's the act of Hefker of the Balim, or it is this Yeush of the Balim, or it's a removal from the possession of the Balim because of the Isur Hana'a. Then afterwards, when the Edim are found to be Edim Zomamim, there's no reversal of that trigger that created the release of the animal. And therefore, whoever is closest to it or takes possession of it first will become the owner of the animal. Because at this point, it's out of the possession of the Balim. And if it happened through the Isur Hana'a, the Isur Hana'a is now removed. And then someone can take possession of whatever value is here. And that's what's being stated by Amar Rav Kuzdai, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that anybody who gets it first is in possession of it. Amar Rava Mistavra time with the Rabbi Yochanan going to Amri Lei near Ba Shoro. That is true if they testify to the fact that there was a third party that had performed bestiality with his shor, and because of that third party, his shor is now subject to death penalty, because he's unaware as to the truth of that statement or not. And therefore, at first, he believes the Edim, and that causes him either to be mafkir, which is why here the Gemara sounds like it's in the Balim's hands, that it sounds like he was mafkir or miyayesh from it, and according to those that say there was an Isur Hana'a, or maybe even there's a machloket here, because there are those that say that there is no Isur Hana'a with regards to an animal that has performed bestiality, only shor and niskal. And that's the Rabbeinu Ephraim's view that's brought here in the Balei HaTosafot. So that clearly can't be the trigger according to Rabbeinu Ephraim. Although the Tosafot summarily dismisses that view of the Rabbeinu Ephraim and says that it has to be that there's an Isur Hana'a over here. But nevertheless, that's here in a situation where he's not aware of the truth. Avalam Ru, Rav Ashoro, if the Edim are testifying that he himself performed bestiality with his animal, he himself knows the truth up to the matter, that he never had bestiality with his animal, he never is releasing his ownership from it, and therefore he goes out of his way to try to find Edim to substantiate his position or to make these Edim into Edim Zomamim. So in that case, he wasn't actively mafkirit, or according to the Beit HaLevi, that it was an issue of Yeush, he's not Miyayesh from it because he thinks he can find a solution to the problem in defending himself in this situation. According to those that say it's Nisar Hana'a, this is much harder to explain because then what does it have to do with what the Balim are thinking? It should be the facts, whether it is or isn't. You could argue that in this case, the individual maintains his ownership over it because even though Nisar Hana'a released it from the individual automatically, over here the Balim stay connected to the animal because they don't believe that it's really Isurei Hana'a, and therefore it remains in their possession because they're considered to be the ones that are Zochenet. So Maishna Mehadama Rabba Bar Iti Amar Resh Lakish. How is this different than a situation that Resh Lakish says by an Irani Dachat who's Mu Edeha, an Irani Dachat where the Edim who testified about the city being an Irani Dachat are found to be lying because Imanu Aitim, you were with us in another place, you couldn't testify to this matter. Kolamach Zipa Zachaba. Anybody who comes can take possession of it. I mean, all the possessions of Irani Dachat are considered to be Hefker. Why is it over there where the individuals who are being penalized, and despite the fact that they may know or may not know whether the worshipping of Avodah Zarah happened, Nevertheless, we still say that their possessions are disowned from them, as opposed to the case here, where we say if the person knows or has information to the contrary, we do not think that the animal is released to hefker. So Gemara says, we are dealing with a multitude of people, kochad amar bidate, each person themselves says, that I didn't sin, but maybe the others did sin. Maybe the rove of the city did the wrong thing over here. Umafkir mimone, and therefore his money is either mufkar, there's yeyush, or he becomes a surbana, and he releases his ownership from that property. That is because when it comes to an ir nidachat, the people who are found guilty are put to death, and their possessions are becoming surbana, need to be destroyed. Those that were not found guilty of avoiding shipping of avodah zarah, they escape from the city, but all their possessions are put to, quote-unquote, death with the remainder of the city, because that's their punishment for living amongst individuals who act in that way. And so therefore they have to leave behind anything that was tainted by the Yer Nidachat. That means all of their possessions, all of their assets of the Yer Nidachat are left behind. So even if the individual himself does not think he's guilty or never worshipped the Barazara, he may not know enough to know whether his possessions now are swept up with the problems of the city, and he doesn't have that information. So that's the equivalent of the Edim saying near Bas Shoro, and that's why he doesn't have in mind not to release his ownership over here. Of a Hacha, to be the Deitalia Milta, over here, where it's him himself they're claiming is guilty of having bestiality with his animal, Hoban Smoke made the Yoda. He himself knows that that's not true. Delo Rava, he never was Roveya. He was never performed bestiality with the animal, below Mafkale, and therefore he never released his ownership over the possessions. The Taracha might Edim, and therefore he brings Edim to substantiate his position, and that's why he hasn't released the item. So now we have another statement. Amar Reish Lakish, Hanotein Matana de Chaviro, someone who grants a gift to their friend, Vamar Halo, and the recipient says, E.F. Shiba, I don't want it, Kol HaMachzik Ba Zachaba, whoever comes to take possession of it first, he gets it. So now the Gemara wants to understand what really transpired over here. Rashi claims that the case of Reish Lakish is a case where the gift was already given, he had accepted the gift. After accepting the gift, he says, E.F. Shiba, I don't really want it. And Reish Lakish reads that as being hefker. He basically has been mafkir. Rashi also notes that this is a case of metaltalim. This is a case of objects that are not real property. They are metaltalim. He accepted the gift. After accepting the gift, he says, E.F. Shiba, I don't want it. That's equivalent to making it hefker. And Gemara wants to know, V'mayishtameha, Damar Rabba Baravua, Amar Rav Sheshet, V'ramila Amar Abau, Amar Rav Sheshet, Mikabel Matana. Person who receives a gift, Shamar Lachar Shabbat Matana Liyado, when he says, after the Matana has already come into his possession, Matana Zo, with regards to this Matana, Tibatel, Mivutelet, E.F. Shiba, Dvarav Kayami. If he says any of these languages, then that what he said is upheld. Bitela, he, Eina Matana, Lo Amarkum. If he says that it's Bitela, or it's not a Matana, he doesn't say anything. What which he said is considered to be invalid. Now, there are three different ways to read this Gemara, and it depends on what the Girsa is. Much of the problem arises because there's a parallel Gemara in Gitin, which has a different Girsa. To solve that problem, Rashi aligns the Girsa here with the Girsa in the Gemara in Gitin. The Girsa that we have in front of us is explained by the Shita Mekuvesit and Ot Yud Bet and the Chidushim in the back as to what's the reasoning behind this Girsa. So we'll read it that way first, then we'll explain the Rabbeinu Gershom, and then we'll explain Rashi, which we'll continue to read the Sugya with the Shita of Rashi. And that is, the Shita Mekuvesit explains over here that the languages that are used in Tibatel, Mibutel, and Yef Shiba are future languages. So it's something in the future. He basically accepted the gift, and accepting the gift, now he's saying in the future, I want to be mafkirit. I want to release it. I want to take it out of my possession. Therefore, Dvarav Kayamim, it works because he's speaking to the future, not speaking to the past. He already accepted the gift, so he can't change the facts on the ground that there was a gift. What he can do is disown it in the future, and that's what those languages do, and therefore Dvarav Kayamim. That is seemingly similar to Reish Lakish's position over here, that if you give a matana l'chaviro and you say Yef Shiba, then it's open season for anybody to take it. We'll have to understand then what the question is, and that'll be the next part of the Gemara. Bitelai einat matana, when he says those languages, those are past tense languages, and he's saying that it was batel, it was never a matana, and that's just not true. He accepted already, it therefore was a matana, and therefore lo amar klum. So then what is the question on Reish Lakish? That is because, my love, dvarav kayamim. When the Brayta over here says that his words are upheld over here, meaning that when he uses the lashon of tivatel, mivutel, the efshiba, we say that it works, we would have thought the Hadra Lamaro, that it goes back to the original owner. When it says that we find that whatever he said is true, it's not that he's releasing it and making it Hefker, he's just rejecting the gift. And rejection of the gift is going to go back to the original owner, and therefore it would be different than what Reish Lakish says. And the answer of the Gemara is, lo, dvarav kayamim, v'unami lo kanilo. His words are upheld, and he doesn't get possession of it, or lo hadra the mare, it doesn't go back to the original owner. V'chol machzik ba zachaba, dvarav kayamim is the same as saying that, v'chol zachi ba kanop, machzik ba zachaba, whoever takes possession of it, and it's not a question on Reish Lakish. If you do uphold the Girsa that way, it will turn out the Girsa is the opposite of the Gemara in Gittin. And Tosfot comments on that that's mena sugyota fuchot b'shas. One of those sugyot that is inverted, is backwards in Shas. And Tosfot notes this phenomenon in many places, whereby you have a sugya in one place in Shas, and somewhere else in Shas it has the exact same sugya with everything flipped, whether it's the Amoraim, there's positions that are flipped over here. It is the question of the languages that are flipped over here. And he says that happens in numerous places in Shas, and this is an example of one of those places. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, explains this differently and says that the Girsa over here has to do with when in the process this was done. And that is that here, in the case of statement from Rav Sheshet that we're bringing down, there are two possible points in time where the individual intercedes to block the gift. And as the Rabbeinu Gershom says that the statement of Reish Lakish is, "Demishash natan ze matana hotzia mirishuto." From the moment of the gifter releases it from his possession, and then, "V'chiamar hala efshiba havyafkir." At the point in time where the gift was being received, he rejects it. In that case, the efshiba works to make it hefker because he never received the gift. And the gifter had already released it from his possession. Mikabel matana shamar me'achar shebat matana liyado. On the other hand, Rav Sheshet says, if it already came into his possession, and then he says, matana zuti batel, that it shouldn't work, klomar she'en rotzeh she'teh mikayemet, that it shouldn't stay or it shouldn't remain in his possession, or he says, he doesn't do anything. So what the Rabbeinu Gershom points out, or the Girsa that he has in the Gemara here, is it's dependent on the time at which this is done. If you lose a Lashon of Tibatel Mibutelet and Yefshiba at the point of gifting, that is sufficient language to stop the gift from coming into your possession. And therefore, the language is sufficiently strong enough to block the gift coming into your possession. What does not work is the case where you've already accepted the gift, and then once you've accepted the gift, then you are saying all these languages of Tibatel, Mibutel, the Yefshiba, those aren't languages of Hefker. Those are languages of rejection. Once it's already in your possession, what's being seen here from this position of Rav Sheshet is that those languages are not successful at removing it from your possession. So when it comes to a gift that's been given to you, you can reject with those languages. But they do not release it totally a hefker, they only return it to the original gifter. And not like what Reish Lakish had suggested, that it's also released from the gifter to make it completely hefker. Because these languages only work to block a gift, they don't work in order to release it totally a hefker, like you would have anticipated based on the statement of Reish Lakish. They only return it to the original gifter. And that's because it says here, Dvarav Kayamim, which is he's successful at blocking the gift, but it doesn't sound like he's successful at making it into Hefker. And that's the Gemara's question from Rav Sheshet on Reish Lakish. Gemara once again rejects that by saying Dvarav Kayamim doesn't simply mean it's returned to the original gifter, but Dvarav Kayamim means that he is successful at removing from his possession completely. And that means not only is his rejection of the gift successful through Efshi, but also the gifter, in giving it, has already taken it out of his possession, and that's why it makes it hefker to anyone, because both parties here have released their ownership, the gifter in gifting it, and the recipient in rejecting the gift. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom reads it. Then, Rashi's version over here actually flips the statement of Rav Sheshet to match with the Gemara in Gittin, and then says the following, Mekabel matana shemar lachar shabat matana diodo, matana zo tibatel, mibutelet ef shiba, lo amar klum. That doesn't work at all. If he says, B'telehi, Eina Matana, then, Tavarav Kayamim. Rashi has it just the opposite. Now, Rashi makes the comment that the first part of this statement of Rav Sheshet is not a problem for Reish Lakish. He says, Mehacha lek lotve the Reish Lakish. Dichi amar Reish Lakish, B'matanat mitaltalim. He was speaking about a matana mitaltalim, B'kem in the at the yade, V'hifkira, Havihefkir. Once it comes into his possession, he can be mafkir it. Avozelo ifkir tasadeh, Eloheinu chafet shetei matana kayemet. This person wasn't mafkir the sadeh. He's trying to say the matana didn't work. Or I don't want this matana. And the problem is that it's using future tense language to dissolve a gift that already exists. So what Reish Lakish will say is that case of Rav Sheshet where EFC doesn't work, that's in a case where the gift was already given to him. It was a matnat karka that came through a shtar. And the individual is not saying that I rejected the shtar. All he's saying is, I don't want the gift. I don't want the gift to be in effect anymore. I don't want the gift to be there anymore. He can't do that. That's all future tense language. Future tense language can't unwind something that already happened in the past. And so, since the gift already happened, this language is not going to dissolve or change the status of this being a gift. On the other hand, where he has mentaltum in his hand, and he's trying to be mafkir the mentaltum, that works to be hefker. He's able to be mafkir it. So, when you speak to the object itself, to the item itself, there efshiba means you're being mafkir it, and that works. If you're speaking to the transaction that created your ownership over it, and you're saying efshiba, that's not a valid way to dissolve or to release your ownership from it, because you're speaking to an event that took place in the past with future language, that future tense language which can't impact something that's already happened in the past. You're not speaking to the karka, which is the object itself. You're speaking to the shtar that was the matana that was given. That matana, you say, is something that I don't want anymore. You can't dissolve a matana because that's something that happened in the past. On the other hand, if you use past tense language, which is betela or ena matana, which means you're speaking to the origins of the transaction and saying, I never accepted as it a gift. I never wanted it to be a gift. In that situation, dvarav kayamim. There you are successful because there you're addressing the matana itself. And even though it looked like you accepted the matana, it looked like it all worked, nevertheless, hodat bal din kamei dimdomi. When a person says something, we believe them. We don't check whether he is or isn't telling the truth. If he says that's what it was, then we believe him. And it's as if he never accepted the gift. Which makes it sound like when he does something like that, he unwinds it retroactively, and the matana that he was given was not released from the giver or grantor of the gift, because we say dvarav kayamim, and that's what the Gemara continues with. Dvarav kayamim makes it sound like it wasn't a gift, and now it's returned to the original owner. It's not made into hefker, and not like what Reish Lakish had suggested, that it's also released from the gifter to make it completely hefker. To that we answer, it's not going back to the original owner, it's totally hefker. Now, in Rashi's explanation, there is an easier answer or a way to answer this. And Rashi says, Eino Chanami. You could have just answered that the cases are not similar. Because in the case where he says, Eino Matana, he's not making the item hefker. He's just basically saying the gift that was given in the past never took place. And so Eino Chanami, it goes back to the original owner because the gift was never given. Reish Lakish is speaking about a case where it's already in his possession. He acknowledges the gift was given and now he's mafkir at Efshiba. And you could have differentiated the cases. Rashi says, Eino Chanami. You didn't have to give the answer the Gemara did, and the Gemara will get to that answer in a later question, but for right now, the Gemara is sufficing with the answer that Dvarav Kayami means it's totally hefker. Okay, Meitave, is this statement of Reish Lakish really, again, true that when you use the Lashon of Yefshiba, that's the equivalent of being mafkir the item, and anybody can take possession of it? Hamor lechavero, din dvarim en liasadeh zu. Two people are in a partnership, and the individual says about his possession or his part of it, I have no qualms, I have no quarrels, I have no issues with this sadeh, mainly a sigba, or I have no interests in here, yadai misuleket demeno, I am totally abandoning it, lo amar klum, he didn't say anything, v'hai yadai misuleket demeno ki efshi dami, when you say that I'm pulling my hands away from it, I have nothing to do with it, that's the same as saying efshi ba, that I don't want it, v'ktani lo amar klum, and it says it doesn't work, you Reish Lakish said that's a lashon of hefker. Over here, we see him trying to be mafkirit, and it doesn't work with that lashon. Where it says, "Shani otam damar ki salik nafshe midinu dvarim migufa de sadeh lo salik nafshe." You have to be midayek in his language over here. Over here, he says that he's releasing himself from midinu dvarim, and the way Rashi explains it over here is, "Behachi askina damar kolom eshanot alav biyachad." He used all these languages in one shot, and Rashi goes through it. Ein dinu dvarim al sadeh zu, means there are no qualms or no quarrels about this sadeh, it's definitely mine. Or, ein li esek b'im shum adam, the dinu dvarim. I have no issues with any individual, there's no contention that this doesn't belong to me. Or yadai misuleket demeinu b'dinu dvarim, that I don't have to argue about this field, it's definitely mine. So we reinterpret his words to be speaking about the dinu dvarim, not about releasing his ownership, but saying that there is no irur. There's no questions about his ownership over here. And when he says it's about dinet dvarim, Rashi over here says he said all three lushonot together and basically was saying in many different ways, there's nobody who has any claim to this property besides me, therefore it's mine. Other places Rashi separates out the language and says we independently can interpret each one in the same way, that it is not a release of his ownership, but rather a statement of that there is no questions as to his ownership over here. So therefore, that doesn't bring us proof that EF sheet doesn't work for Hefker, because over there, it's on a particular part of his statement that we're saying the EF sheet applies, and that's Dinu Dvarim, and Dinu Dvarim is actually something that's negative. So if you take two negatives, you say EF sheet by Dinu Dvarim, that ends up saying, basically, I do own the property, and therefore it does not undermine what Reish Lakish says. Meitave. So again, we're going to try to bring a question from here. Hakotev nechasav le'acherim. Someone who writes and gives his possessions to someone else. We're speaking about a shchiv meira here. Someone who's on their deathbed. And on their deathbed, they gift their certain properties to a third party. And amongst those items that were being gifted, ayuben habadim, there were avdei kananiim that were part of that. V'hamar halo. And the recipient of the gift says, EF Shiban, I don't want them. So now, imaya roboshini kohen, if the second person, I mean the recipient of the gift is a kohen, ochlim b'truma, then those abadim are able to eat truma. Shemilomer, kevin shamar EF Shiban, kvar zachu ben yoshin. If he says EF Shiban, then the yoshim, I mean the individual, the shkib meira, or if he passed away, his yoshim, they took possession of it, and therefore they have nothing to do with the second party over here. As Rashi notes over here, the Gemara in Baba Batra and in Chulin sets up this case, where a case where he gave a shtar matana to this individual, and he did it through a third party. He handed it to a third party to acquire or to receive it on behalf of the recipient of the gift, and the recipient of the gift at that time said nothing. He was silent at that moment. Later on, the recipient comes along and says, "Ef Shiban, I had no interest in this gift." The question is, and this is a machlok between the Chachamim and Shimon Gamliel, is, how do we view his later retraction or rejection of the gift? Do we view that as that was his intent all along? And therefore, even when the gift was given, he rejected it up front. And now he's just articulating that rejection, but he never accepted it even from the outset. Or do we say that why he was silent at first was because he accepted it. Now he's trying to release it. He's trying to reject it after the fact. So that makes the distinction in what happens over here. According to the Chachamim, the Tanakhama, the gift went through because his silence was acquiescence to the gift. And now when he's trying to release it afterwards and reject it afterwards, it doesn't work. And that's why the Abadim are now able to eat Truma if he's a Kohen, because they're still in his possession. Shimon Gamliel says, if he says, I don't want it, that means he didn't want it. That means he never accepted the gift from the outset. And that means the property remains with the original owner who was gifting it because he never accepted the gift. And therefore it stays with the Shechiv Meira. And if he passed away, it goes to his Yorshim. So now the Gemara explains, Bishlam al Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, in the view of Reish Lakish, that EFSHI is a form of Hefker, Kasavik Yavinish Matana, Adaita Mekablin Lamine. When a person gifts something, and this is what Rashi noted before, this could be the answer we could have given before to explain the stira between Rav Sheshit and Reish Lakish. Over here, you could have used this same answer, which is that when a person gives something directly to an individual, when he doesn't accept it, Hadra Lamara goes back to the gifter. The gifter doesn't release ownership and say, you take it. He's saying, you take it. If you don't take it, I'm keeping it. And that's what happens here, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The person rejects the gift. We accept his rejection as being a rejection from the outset, even though he only spoke up later. And therefore, it's not Hefker because it was going from a gifter to a giftee. The giftee rejects it. It stays in the possession of the gifter. And that's why it goes back to the gifter, the Shechiv Meira, or to his Yorshim. So that won't be a stira for Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish is speaking in a case where the gift was already accepted, and then he's using EF sheet, that's Hefker, that's not a rejection of a gift. According to the Kama, the E Ka'amar EF Shiban, if you say EF Shiban, Ko Machzik Ben Zachaben, if you say that when you say EF sheet, according to the Tanakhama, according to the Chachamim, the first rejection wasn't a real rejection because he accepted the gift and then tried to reject it afterwards. If that's the case, then his acceptance brought into his possession. Now when he says, Yef Shibar, according to Reish Lakish, you're mafkirit, then kol makzikben and zachaben. That's hefker to anyone who wants to take possession of that. Hachadamar sheni, Yef Shibar. So then when the second party, the recipient of the gift, who accepted the gift according to the Chachamim, and now is mafkirit, havalu zarim, mekachli zarim truma. How could it be that his hefker would have then released them? If they are released, then they can't eat truma because they are zarim. They don't belong. They're not in his possession anymore. The Kohen, who accepted the gift according to the Chachamim, and then later it said EF, she means now it's Hefker. Once he makes the Abadim Hefker, they acquire themselves. They're the first party to acquire themselves. And then they are independent entities, nothing to do with this second order, nothing to do with this Kohen. That's the case. Why did the Rabbanan say they can eat from the truma? My answer is Kasavar Amafkir Abdo, Amafkir Abdo, Yatzada Kherut, Vitzahrich, Get Shikhur Mirabo. The answer is that even when a person is mafkir, is eved, that does not fully release the eved to his own reconnaissance. He needs document of emancipation in order to completely release him. So he's still bound to this owner, even though he's mafkirit. Regular possessions are, once you release your ownership, there's nothing else to do, and anybody can take them. By avadim, since they are the first party, they took possession of themselves, but they still have this aspect of abdut that hasn't been released because of the get shichur that was not given. They need a document of emancipation. The kasavar, and he also believes, mukav get shichur, someone who still needs a document of emancipation, ochel b'truma. He's still considered to be the possession of that individual, and therefore they're entitled to eat truma. So given those positions, that's why the Chachamim believe over here that the Avadim eat. Even though Efshi works as Hefker, and these Avadim are Hefker, that Hefker wasn't sufficient grounds to release them because they still need a Get Shichur. And according to this view of the Chachamim, if you still need a Get Shichur, you're considered to be the possession of the Kohen, and you can eat truma, and therefore it's not a question on Reish Lakish. Because yes, the Efshi worked, but it worked as good as it can for Avadim. And there it's not the full release of the Eved. He needs other things to release himself. And it's unique to Eved Kanani that it has these bonds that still connect him to the second owner, even after he was mafkir them. And so Rish Lakish's position of Efshi is not undermined by this question from the Gemara in Baba Batra and in Chulin. Okay, the Gemara continues here with that which is quoted from the Mishnah, which is there is a third opinion. We had the position of the Chachamim, which an animal that was an Hashem Taloi, that was Nit Kadesh, he remains kadosh because of gamar b'libo makdish et zeh, because libo nokfo, whereas Rabbi Meir thinks that it's a chulin. Then we have the third position, which is Rabbi Leizo Meri Krav. The Hashem Taloi can still be brought, because imenu baal chet zeh, areyu baal chet acher. If you don't bring it on this sin, you're going to bring it for another sin. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Leizo, lama li chet? According to Rabbi Leizo, why do you need a chet at all? Amar Rabbi Leizo, Hashem Taloi min edava, atid. Because he says that an Hashem Taloi can be brought on a voluntary basis. It's not, because we see in the upcoming Mishnah that it says, person can dedicate, donate, and Hashem Taloi to the Mikdash every day. In the upcoming Mishnah, tomorrow's daf, Rabbi Eliezer says you can voluntarily bring a Hashem Taloi anytime you want. So why do there have to be, if it's not for this chait, it's on another chait, what does chait have anything to do with it? You could just bring it as a voluntary offering. Amravashi, Rabbi Eliezer de Amrulohu. Not Rabbi Eliezer himself, but rather there's a subsequent story in that Mishnah with Bava ben Buta, who followed that position, Rabbi Eliezer, and brought in Hashem Taloi every day. But then there were people there that stopped him from bringing it on Motzei Yom HaKippurim. According to those, the Amrulo, which we're going to see a lot of in tomorrow's daf, those individuals believe that you need some semblance of chait before you can bring it. They don't think that you can only bring it for something that is B'mezid, Karet, and Shogei Chatat, but they also don't believe you can bring it as a voluntary offering. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer, that's mentioned in the first Mishnah here, is following that position of the Amrulo that is found in the Mishnah tomorrow, and we'll spend, again, more time on that tomorrow, and that is the Tanan, Elo Amrim Lo Amtein, Hachikdanes, the Beit HaSafik. Because over there, they demand that before he brings an Hashem Taloi, Beva Ben Buta, at least he enter the possibility of having sinned. So you see over there that they do require some semblance of sin before you can bring in Hashem Taloi, and they'll be the authors of this position in the name of Rabbi Eliezer in the first Mishnah. So, Imish Nishchat no da lo, Katani, it says in the Mishnah, Basar you'd say the Beit HaSreifa, that goes out to the Beit HaSreifa. Alma, from this you would conclude, Chulin Shenishchatu Bazara, B'Sreifa. Chulin Shenishchatu Bazara are subject to being burnt and not to being buried. Happens to be that it's a machloket in the Mishnah in Tmura, which we learned recently, between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda believes that Chulin Shenishchatu Bazara are Min HaNikvarim, those are Isurei HaNa'a that have to be buried. Rabbi Shimon believes it's Chulin Shenishchatu Bazara are Min HaNisrafim, those items that have to be burnt. It's machloket there, whether it's to Oraita the problem, or it's Dirabonon, and otherwise it's just a Gezeira Otu. But that is a machloket over there. The Gemara here is not actually addressing that machloket, but just saying that the Mishnah here should be consistent in its policy. If it believes Chulin Shenishchatu Bazara should be B'Sreifa, then the entire Mishnah should stay that way. If it is B'Gvura, it should stay that way. What we're finding is that there's an inconsistency in the Mishnah, and I'll point that out to you now, which is in the first scenario of the Mishnah, where we said that if you bring an Hashem Taloi, and then you find out after you've shechted it, then Basar Yitzeh, the Beit HaSreifa. In that case, it's taken out to be burnt. Nizrak Adam, if you already did the Zrika Adam, and you have the basar in front of you, there, yeachel, it can't be eaten. And Rabbi Yossi says that even if the blood is in the cup, you can still eat it. Then, asham vadai enu kein. The Mishnah says that in asham vadai, it's not that way. Nishchat, if it was found before you were shechting it, it goes out to be chulin. After it's shechted, you find out you didn't need it, then it's buried. Nizrak Adam, if you do the Zrikat Adam and then find out that you didn't need it, then a Basayid say the Beit HaSreifah. So here you have a problem, which is that in two of the instances, it says that the pasul item goes to the Sreifah. One of them, it goes to Kvura, and therefore the Mishnah is not consistent. By Hasham Taloi, it's telling us, in Mishnah Nishkat, after you already shechted it, you found out it wasn't necessary before you did Zrikat Adam, then the animal goes out the Sreifah. So that would be the implications of what we just said now. Alma, chulin shenishkatu bazara, go out to the Sreifa. Yet, when you go to the Hasham Vadai, and you find out you didn't need it after Shkita, before Zrikat Adam, over there we say Nikbarin, it's buried, which makes it sound like chulin shenishkatu bazara gets buried. Then right after that, you said if you did the Zrikat Adam, and then find out it was Pasul, you do it the Sreifa. So those three different positions are going to cause us the problem that we're going to have to try to solve over here. And that's what the Gemara says, very many. If it was found out to be not necessary before you shechted it, then it goes out to be chulin. Once it's already shechted, you bury it. So why over here are you burying it, and before you said that you put in the sreifa? Both of them are situations or cases of chulin shenishchat u'bazara, and despite that fact, you're saying one case the sreifa, and one case you're saying yikaver. Samarab Elazar tavra, mishishanazo, lo shanazo. Whoever taught that part of the Mishnah did not teach the other part of the Mishnah. Basically, we have dual authorship over here. And one position believes that Chulin Shenishkatu Lazara go to Sreifa. The other one says Likvura. And they are both incorporated in this Mishnah, even though they're not consistent within this Mishnah. Tosfot over here says, according to the Reed, that this Stira is only a problem for Rabbi Meir and not for the Chachamim. The Chachamim believe that an Hasham Taloi is still Kadosh. And therefore, if you shecht it when it's still Kadosh, then you have a problem not of chulin shenishchatu bazara, but rather a zebach pasul. And a zebach pasul is l'sreifa, and that explains why in the Reisha it's l'sreifa. Yasham vadai, where a person is not makdishit elim keni needs it, therefore when he finds out he doesn't need it, it really is chulin bazara. Over there you get kvura. There you don't have any stira. The chulin shenishchatu bazara is l'kvura, like Rabbi Yehuda. The Reisha is a zebach pasul, and that's why it's l'sreifa. The question is according to Rabbi Meir, who thinks also the Hasham Taloi is also chulin. Because when a person is makdish the Hasham Taloi, he doesn't full-heartedly do such a thing, and therefore it goes out the chulin. And so too, if you're a nishchatu, it is chulun shenishchatu ba'azara. And given that, why is it in that case you do sreifa, which is understandable for the chachamim, because there it's a zevach pasul, but for him it's not understandable. And then later on we say it goes likvura when it's chulun shenishchatu ba'azara. So that's the Tosafot's view, that this is only a question within Rabbi Meir's position. There are others that believe that even according to the Chachamim, the question exists, because the Chachamim, even though they believe a person is makdishit, because libo nokfo, yes, that brings it to a certain level of kedusha, but it doesn't elevate it to the status of a real zevach. It makes it something that's above chulin, but it's still closer to chulin, shenishkatu b'azara, than to a real korban that has a psul in it, and therefore they think the question exists even for the Chachamim. The reconciliation so far is that Enochanami, there is a stira here, and it's authored by two different parties. Amarabo, Hasham Vadai, al Hasham Taloi, Karamit. You're asking a question from an Hasham Vadai to an Hasham Taloi. Hasham Vadai came into Lo Tzarich Lei, Lo Makdish Lei. When it comes to Hasham Vadai, as we said all along, if you don't need it, you're not Makdish it. That's Chulin Shenishkatu Bazara. Therefore, it gets the appropriate burial, Kvura, like you would have expected for Chulin Shenishkatu Bazara. Hasham Taloi, Mitom Shlibo Nokfo, Gomeru Makdisho. Since he is paying by guilt and he thinks he needs it, he is makdishit full-heartedly, and therefore it becomes a zevach pasul. So now, that sounds much more like the Chachamim's position, because this is a logic we saw in the position of the Chachamim. And therefore, that's why the others, like the Aruch Dener and the Sfat Emet, believe this question is even on the Chachamim, and the answer is that the Chachamim have a korban that is much more like a zevach, and therefore it's subject to sreifa. According to the Balei Tosafot, this is a question on Rabbi Meir, and now the Balei Tosafot say that even Rabbi Meir agrees to this concept of libo nokfo. He says that the person holds out all along so that it will be chulin if he finds out in time. But he doesn't find out in time, and he finally does the shechita. At that point, he's gomer b'libo, and he's shechting it b'shem en Hasham Taloi, and he's makdishit b'chol libo. And even according to Rabbi Meir, then you have a zevach pasul now, and that's the answer, is that because it's a zevach pasul, it looks like a zevach pasul, therefore, it goes l'sreifa, according to Rabbi Meir. Even though Rabbi Meir doesn't subscribe to this idea, in the end, he does agree that if you actually go through the process, that it has a din of ektesh. If you find out you didn't need it, it is a zevach pasul, or something similar to a zevach pasul. Now that would accord with what the Baal HaTos would say back on Daf Yud Chet with regards to the position of Rabbi Meir versus the Chachamim there. Rabbi Meir says, you are chayav shchutei chutz when it comes to an asham taloi. That's because Rabbi Meir says in the end, when a push comes to shove, you are magdishit. It's only when you find out that you weren't that you kind of held back or you hold back. But otherwise, we assume that the animal is kadosh and you act like it is kadosh. There is the sheet of the Chachamim over there who believe that even mishkutei chutz you're not chayav for because the person withholds his ekdesh all the way through. He even has reservations at the point of maybe even shchita over here. Elai kasha. So now the Gemara goes and says, okay, you solved that problem, but this is the real problem. Hashem vadai, Hashem vadai kasha. I pointed out that by the Hashem vadai, there's also a stira there because ktani arizei kaver. It says that if it was done or found out between shchita and zrika, then it is yikaver like chulin shenishkatu bazara. Ema seifa, but then afterwards says abasai yetzei the beta sreifa. If you already did the Zrika Dadam, and then you find out it wasn't necessary to bring the Hashem Vadai, there it says the Basar goes out the Beit HaSreifa. Ha Vadai, there you must say, Tavra Mishin Shanazo, Lo Shanazo. There it has to be different authorships, because you're dealing both cases of Hashem Vadai. One case you say Yigaver, and one case you say Yisareif. Why should there be a distinction? They both are classified as Kulin Shanishchatu Bazara. They should have the same din. Ravashi Amar, over here they're different Girsaot, and they impact on what you think Ravashi is answering. According to Rashi, Ravashi is answering this latter question as to why there's a difference between an Hashem Vadai, between Shechita and Zrika, and an Hashem Vadai after Zrika, and therefore all that is found in parentheses over here is skipped, according to Rashi. And Ravashi says, Amar Mishum Demit Chazek Zevach Pasul. The answer to that question is because the Hashem Vadai after Shechita and Zrikat Adam already looks like it is a Zevach Pasul. If you don't put it the Sreifa, people are going to get the mistaken impression that a Zevach Pasul gets Vura and not Sreifa. So in order to prevent that misunderstanding, even though here it's Kulin Shnishchatu B'Lazara, we do it the Sreifa in order that people don't get confused. That's what Rashi says the answer of Rashi is answering this latter question as to why there's a Stira by Hashem Vadai. Then if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he keeps that Girsa in, and he says Ravashi is actually answering the earlier question of the Gemara as to why there's a difference between Hashem Taloi and Hashem Vadai. And his answer is, Afilu Tema de Binishchat, Vachakach Nodala Le Rabbi Meir Libo Nokfo. Even if you believe, not like we suggested in the Gemara according to the Baal Tosafot, that Rabbi Meir holds of Libo Nokfo at the point of Shechita, Velo Gamra Makdish. And even at that point, Rabbi Meir thinks you're not Makdishit. Nevertheless, there's a reason to do it Lisreifa, because if you don't do it Lisreifa, then you're going to run yourself into a problem when the Asham Taloi is post Zrikat Adam. Here we're speaking about the Hashem Taloi after Shechita, before Zrikat Adam. If you tell me there that it's Kulin Shenishchatu Bazara, and therefore it requires Kvura, so if you're Koveret, that means that after Zrikat Adam, nothing should have changed, and it should still be Kulin Shenishchatu Bazara, and the Kohanim won't eat it, and they're going to send it out, either the Beit HaSreifa or bury it. And they'll come to the mistaken conclusion that even after Zrikat Adam, the same din applies. Therefore, we tell you to do a Sreifa beforehand, so they think it's a Zevach Pasul. They think it's a Zevach Pasul, then after you get after Zrikat Adam, then the Pasul doesn't matter anymore if you find out the information, and then the Kohanim will eat it. Because we know from the Mishnah that after Zrikat Adam, everybody agrees you eat it because it came ala Safek, and it did what it was supposed to do ala Safek. We'll discuss it a little more in the next piece of the Gemara, but it did whatever it was supposed to do, and therefore it's a kosher korban. So even though you found out after the Zrikat Adam, that's fine, and the Basar is Ne'achal. So in order to avoid that confusion, therefore Rabbi Meir says you do Sreifa on it when it's between Shechita and Zrika, in order that people think it's a Zevach Pasul, so that when Zrika Adam happens, people will eat it, instead of thinking it's also Chulin Nishchatu Bazara post-Zrika like it is pre-Zrika, and that is not true. That's what Rav Ashi is trying to answer, is what's the difference between the Hashem Taloi and the Hashem Vadai. They believe, fundamentally, that everything requires Kfura for Chulin Nishchatu Bazara. The Hashem Taloi is an exception, because Rabbi Meir goes there all through the time when it's after Zrikat Adam where the Kohanim should eat it. So therefore, beforehand, it does do it straight fast so people don't make the mistake that it's Chulin Shnishchatu Elazara, which would be true both before Shechita and after Shechita. That's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom reads it. The Baal HaTosafot then take both Pshatim, that of Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom, and say Rabashi answers everything in the Mishnah in a little bit of a different logic, but he says that in the Hashem Vadai case where you have yet to do Zrikat Adam, it doesn't look like a Zevach Pasul, and therefore you do Kvura, because it's Kulin Shenishchatu Bazara. On the other hand, in the case where you already did Shechita and Zrikat Adam, then you find out that it was Kulin, that looks much more like a Zevach Pasul, and therefore we tell you to do Sreifa. And similarly, in the case of Hashem Taloi, where you did the Shechita and then you don't do the Zrikat Adam, there we say it's Sreifa, because even though it's before Zrikat Adam there, but Aval Hashem Toloy, the Baal HaSafek, Gam Lifnei Zrikat Yitzareif, the Mechse Yoter Kezevach Pasul. It looks much more like a Zevach Pasul, because it came on the Safek to start with. It came on a Safek to start with, and just because the Safek now is cleared up, doesn't mean that the Korban should be made into Chulin. It makes sense that it should be classified as a Safek or a Zevach Pasul. And therefore, Ravashi is answering both questions. Why is it Sreifa in the case of Hashem Toloy? Why is it Sreifa in the case of after Zrika Dadam Hashem Vadai? And why is it Kvura between Shechita and Zrika Hashem Vadai? The answer is, Chulin Shenishchatu Bazara is Kvura. And that's that middle case where it's between Shechita and Zrika and Hashem Vadai. The case afterwards where it's Hashem Vadai after Zrika Dadam, that looks like a Zevach Pasul. So we don't want people thinking Zevach Pasul gets Kvura. So we do Sreifa so that people know that a Zevach Pasul gets Sreifa. What about the Hashem Toloy? There too, people will think it's a Zevach Pasul because it was brought on a Safek. And even though the Pasul happened between Shechita and Zrika, nevertheless, because it was a Safek to start with, they're going to think that it was a Zevach Pasul because it was Nit Kadesh anyway, even though there was a Safek. Therefore, they would think it's a Zevach Pasul. Therefore, we do Sreifa so people don't get the mistaken impression that Zevach Pasul gets a Gvura. There you have Rashi saying that Ravashi is addressing the Stira in Hashem Vadai. Beinu Gershom saying it's addressing the stira between Hashem Vadai and Hashem Taloy. And Tosafot what's saying he's addressing all the cases and telling you why there are three different outcomes in the three different cases that we have mentioned from the Mishnah. Nizrak Adam, once the Dam is already Nizrak, a Basar Yeachel. By the case of the Hashem Taloy, if the Zrikat Adam is already done, then the Basar is eaten, it's a kosher korban. Famai, Hayavile Yediyah. At that point, you already know that you didn't need the Hashem Taloy, either because you didn't do the sin, or because you did do the sin, you need to bring a chatat, but either way, you don't need it. So then why is it that this is a kosher korban? Once you have that yediyah that it was unnecessary. Amarava amarkra, v'hula yada v'nislach lo. He didn't know about it. And then this provides slicha. V'ha lo havi yediyah v'shat slicha. At the moment of slicha, the moment of the kapara, he didn't know that information. Or, in essence, what he is saying is that the point of the korban, asham, taloi, is to provide kapara, in the case where he doesn't know. When is the crucial point in any korban? That is the time of kaparat adam. That's what the pasuk says in Achrei Mot, that the dam is given to you to be placed on the mizbeach. Ki adam bu anefesh yechaper. That's the ikar slicha happens with the zrikat adam. At that moment of the zrikat adam, lo yada. And that's the case. Vim nefesh ki techata vasta achat mikol mitzvot Hashem asher lo tasena velo yada v'ashem v'nasa avono. This korban will take care of it velo yada. How long does it have to be lo yada for the korban to be kosher? That's at the point of kapara or slicha, which is at the time of zrikat adam. That's when it has to be lo yada. If you find out afterwards, that's not a problem. And that's what the pasuk says. At the point of kapara, the mistake that he made and didn't know, v'nislach lo. At that point of slicha, as long as he's lo yada, that's a kosher korban. The fact that he found out afterwards does not retroactively disqualify the korban, because you had the iyediyah at the moment of the slicha or the kapara, and therefore remains a kosher korban. Rabbi Yossi Omer, afilu adam bakos. Rabbi Yossi says, even if you never did the zrikat adam, but it's sitting in the kos, that's enough of a reason to go through with the korban. Even if you find out that, you can do the zrikat adam and eat the korban. Rabbi Yossi Amai Zarek, why do you do the zrikat adam if you found out already that it's yada? That you know the problem, and therefore it's no longer v'lo yada at the time of an islach lo. Because at the time of kaparat adam, you already have the information. Havilei yediyah b'shat slicha, because he has that knowledge at the point of slicha or kapara. Amarava, Rabbi Yossi, sever like Rabbi Shimon. He holds like Rabbi Shimon, who we find in the Gemara Baba Kama and other places in Shas. Damar kolomet bizarei kezaruk dami. Anything that has the potential is ready to be zaruk, placed on the mizbeach b'zrikat adam. It's as if you did it. It's as if it was already completed. Mar says, Ima dama Rabbi Shimon ben Midei, dome lizareik. That's true when it's something that should go on the Mizbeach, you just have yet to do it. So therefore, since it's ready to go on the Mizbeach, and now you haven't done it, we look at it as if it was already done. But that's assuming that it could end up on the Mizbeach. This dam can't go on the Mizbeach because this dam was disqualified because of the Yediyah. Vai ain't omei lizareik, but this is never going to go on the Mizbeach because you have a Yediyah already. So how can you say, well, it's ready to go on, but it can't go on? Well, it's ready to go on and it can't go on, then it didn't go on because there's no kolamet zarek kizaruk dami. That is, if it's done, it can only be if it's done, if it was possible to do it, or it would have been possible to do it. And that you don't have over here. Amrei b'marova, so in Eretz Yisrael they answered what the position Rabbi Yossi was relying on is, Hazar Rabbi Yossi, kli sharet mikachim bo et apsul b'tchila v'ikarev. Kli sharet have the potential the possibility, the capacity to be makdish something that is otherwise pasul, to be put on the chatchila on the mizbeach. We know that the mizbeach has that capacity, which is if something pasul ends up on the mizbeach, the mizbeach is collated and it remains on the mizbeach and it becomes the food, it becomes the ochel of the mizbeach, and that item remains there. We've mentioned that numerous times here. We have psulim that end up in the mizbeach. They stay on the mizbeach and it's considered to be akrava. So, big question, and this is raised in the Gemara in Zvachim, as to whether Kli Sharif function in the same way. Reish Lakish posits this question to Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan actually answers him in the negative and says that a Kli Sharif does not do what the Mizbeach does, and it's unable to do that. So that makes it strange over here that the Gemara is saying that Rabbi Yossi does think it works, as he is relying on that position when Rabbi Yochanan says the contrary. So Tosafot says that this is unique over here. Yesh Lamar Ba'alma Sharp Sulim Itlei Ein Mekadshin. Everybody agrees by other psulim that it doesn't work. V'halcha shani denze psul kol kach. Over here, it's not a full-fledged psul because the korban was brought because of the kifat alev. It was brought ala safek to start with, and therefore there's a tzad in this korban that keeps it alive or kadosh, even though you technically don't need it because the whole point of bringing it was ala safek. So based on that, the kli sharet has the capacity to elevate that to something that now can belong on the mizbeach, because it retains a certain amount of kedusha to it, even though it's no longer needed on the mizbeach, as opposed to other psulim, which are completely disqualified from the mizbeach, there the kli sharet can't uplift them, elevate them to go on the mizbeach. And this is a unique din that is associated with the korban hasham taloi that's bala safek. And of course, according to the rabbanon, disagree with Rabbi Yossi and say yishafei. What they're going to say is that even if you believe in general that it works, that a kli sharet can be mekadesh something, there it won't work, because those items are kodoshim that have a psul in them. Therefore, the kli sharet can elevate them. Over here, you don't have kodoshim that have psul in them. They're no longer kodesh, because when you don't need it, it becomes chulin or unnecessary, and therefore it's no longer kodoshim with a psul. It's something that is completely unnecessary, and therefore the kli sharet does not have the capacity to elevate it, and therefore they say that even if it goes into kli sharet, and normally that would work, over here it won't work, because it doesn't have sufficient kedusha retained in it, and therefore yishafech, the dam should be spilled out into the sewer system of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines from the bottom of Chavdalet Amud Bet.